On today's episode of Hardwood Handicappers, we're looking at Game 5 between the Knicks and Spurs. We're also talking about the NBA offseason. There's more Giannis Antetokounmpo rumors. A potential trade we've heard about the Hornets getting Domantas Sabonis, so we'll talk about that. And then I want to dive into the NBA draft.
Welcome to Hardwood Handicappers with Zach Cohen, right here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
This is Zachary Cohen, VSiN.com senior editor. Let's talk about Game 5. That's where I want to start. So this game isn't until Saturday. We are recording this on Friday, June 12th. It is 10:30 a.m. Eastern as we start to do this. And as of right now, Spurs 5.5-point favorites, totals 216.5, and it's going to be really, really interesting. This could have go one of two ways. The Spurs can look at this as an opportunity to be the second team to come back from a 3-1 deficit. It's not impossible. We saw, you know, the Cavaliers do it against the Warriors almost 10 years ago. Or 10 years ago at this point. But look, they've outplayed the Knicks for like 60% of this series. So that's what you have to tell yourselves if you're San Antonio. It's been ugly. You haven't been able to close games, but you've been putting yourself in positions to win pretty much every single night. Mitch Johnson just needs to make sure his team knows that before they go out there, because this is a game that they should feel like they're going to win. The spread speaks for itself. 5.5 points after everything we've seen in this series so far shows that the odds makers still believe San Antonio should win this game. And I believe this is another game where the sharp money's on the Spurs. We will see a little bit closer to tip-off on Saturday night. But as of right now, it's overwhelming action on New York. Nearly 90% of the tickets, 90% of the money over at DraftKings Sportsbook has come in on the Knicks. And that's not that surprising. I mean, I feel like everyone has lost faith in New York, in San Antonio, after blowing a 29-point lead, which, look, it was the biggest comeback in NBA Finals history. The Spurs completely unraveled in both the third and the fourth quarters. But really, to me, I've kind of thought on it over the last couple of days. Like, the stretch that lost them the game was in the third quarter, midway point. They just take like 7-8 bad threes in a row. Knicks come down, chip away, and it just rattled San Antonio. It allowed the crowd to, you know, kind of believe that New York was going to come back, which they should, considering how many times this Knicks team has done it. What do we see this season? We saw the Cavaliers come back where they were down, 22 points with like 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter in game one of the Eastern Conference Finals. We saw that crazy Rockets game that was on national TV where Houston was killing them. They end up finding a way to beat them. And it happens all the time with this New York team. There's no quitting them. This Knicks team is experienced. They play together. They have great chemistry. They don't go away. The Spurs need to just kind of learn from that loss, which is going to be very tough to do. But the things that I think we're going to need to expect to see, like what I think they need to learn, I do think one of them is just kind of a personnel issue. I think late in games, I understand why you want to give the ball to De'Aaron Fox. It's a former clutch player of the year. He's your oldest guard. He's your most experienced guard. But this is not a guy that has played well enough in the postseason for you to know for sure that he's better than the young guys in a pressure situation. And he was not in game four. Like, if you really wanted to pin this loss on one person, on one player, while it might be tempting to go Wembanyama, who missed two free throws and was definitely a shell of himself in that fourth quarter, looked tired, it was Fox, because Fox had the ball in his hands for a majority of that fourth quarter and just was not able to do anything with it. And ended up having, you know, the end of the play, end of the game where, you know, steals the ball from Brunson, goes down the court, thinks he has a layup, gets blocked by OG Anunoby. I think a lot of people are killing Fox for making that decision. Like, he should have pulled the ball out. But there is a world in which he just lays that in or dunks it and they go up three, which would have been fine. But he went up with like a soft layup. I don't think his explosiveness is back from his ankle injury, so that hurt him too. I don't think he was able to create the separation on Anunoby that he expects to do. So, look, it was definitely a poor performance from Fox. And what I'd like to see Mitch Johnson do is, I don't think it needed to cut down the minutes. I think the Fox should be out there, but it doesn't need to be De'Aaron Fox isolations, rinse and repeat. Like, it could be, you know, Dylan Harper. Like, that's the guy that I want with the ball in his hands down the stretch. Like, I understand Fox's pedigree, if he even has that, might be the wrong word, but I do think Harper is your best downhill attacker. Don't think that anybody on the Knicks has proven that they can stay in front of him in an isolation setting. So if you don't have Anunoby on Harper, Harper going up against whoever else is your best offensive option outside of getting Wemby the ball closer to the basket. So I would just like to see them, if this does end up being close late, give Harper a chance, give Castle a chance. I mean, Castle got himself in foul trouble. That ended up being a huge part of this game that no one really talked about. But that's really the on-court stuff that I'm expecting to see. Like, that's the only real change you can make. It's like, how different can things be? Like, how different do you want them to be? They built that 29-point lead playing fantastic basketball, and they unraveled just playing miserable basketball. They just need to come out, play their game, play that game plan that Mitch Johnson puts forth for them. And they need to not let their foot off the gas, because you can't do it against the Knicks. So that's kind of where I'm at. I don't really see any major adjustments outside of maybe letting Harper run some more offense late in the game. I will also say, like, 2 days of rest has been very beneficial for Wembanyama in this postseason. So that's another advantage to San Antonio. And also, like, flip around the narrative from game one of the Western game one of this finals after game seven of the Western Conference Finals, where everyone said, oh, like, Wembanyama and the Spurs were partying like they won the NBA championship on the court after beating the Thunder in game seven. Then you have to play 2 days later, 3 days later. Like, this is a very similar situation. It's the Knicks just had, like, what felt like an NBA Finals clinching win in New York. Everyone was going insane. There were five guys, workers, being, like, murdered in broad daylight. There was an absolute celebration after the Knicks won that game. And now they have to play after 2 days of rest. Make them feel that. Like, come out, show them that this is still a series, play a really good first quarter, and all of a sudden, this is a series again. If you win this game, like, it'll seem kind of crazy that there were the celebrations that there were last night or two nights ago with just how much series is left. Like, if you win this game, all of a sudden you're talking about a game six in New York where the pressure is then on the home team to close it out. It can change really fast. It already feels like it did, but it can happen again. I think the Spurs just need to go out there realizing that there's more series left and that they can make a really good argument that they've been the better team in this series. So don't think that rolling over and quitting is something that I'd expect. And look, we'll get into that now. For my game five best bets, I did take the Spurs -5 at -105. So I do think laying the points is the way I want to go about this. If you've been listening to this podcast long enough, you know that I do look for situations where there's a heavy majority of casual bettors on one of the two teams, and then I do look to the other side. And I think this is shaping up to be like an all-time casual spot where the, like, I think everyone in the world is going to look at what happened in game four and say, oh, the Spurs are done. They're going to quit. The Knicks have them. And they're going to jump on the points with +5.5, or they're going to jump on the money line. And I just don't think it's going to be that easy. I think San Antonio is going to find a way back into the win column and extend this series. And we'll see who the officials are. That'll be interesting too. But if it's a game that's called, you know, pretty soft again, that also favors the Spurs. And look, I think that there's just a subliminal, like, a hidden thing with the Knicks players where I know how business-minded they are and, like, how locked in and focused they can be. But I do feel like part of them is like, it'd be really cool to win this thing back in New York. And that's just not the right attitude. I feel like the Spurs come out with a hunger and a desperation that the Knicks can't match for the first time in this series. I feel New York is a really, really good team at matching the intensity of their opponent. I don't know that you can match the intensity of, this is your last game of the season, this is the NBA Finals, it's an elimination game. I know the Knicks have been, like, all world, I don't even know how to describe it. Like, unbeatable is not even the right word. Completely dominant is probably a little bit better. In closeout games, they've just kicked the crap out of teams. And that is what we have here. They're going to have, you know, multiple closeout games for the Spurs team. But I do think San Antonio is better than the teams that the Knicks have closed out already in this playoffs. I do think you're going to get some Greg Popovich involvement. It sounds like every time they lose a big game, he, you know, lends his expertise, gives them a talk, and does seem like they respond to that most of the time. So I just think that the Spurs, like, it's a really strong situation. It is a really, really sharp side. And I could fully understand why people wouldn't want to jump on this one with me. I see why the Knicks would look like the more appealing team, especially with the late game execution being like leaps and bounds better. But I think that the Spurs are going to win. I think they're going to cover. So I took minus five. That's still available out there. If you have to take minus 5.5, I would suggest doing so. But I'm laying the points with the Spurs just to win one unit. And then I have two other plays for this game. I have Devin Vassell over 2.5 made threes at plus 118. Took this one in game four, just risking a half unit in that one. Risking a full unit on this time, like he knocked that down. He ended up winning that bet in the first quarter. He knocked down three threes right away, and it was over. It was easy. We just had to watch the rest of the game and hope that the other two plays came in, which they did. So it was a really good game four for us, even though the team that we are rooting for lost. But Vassell, 3+ made threes in three straight games. Shoots better on the road than he does at home, so that always stinks. But 48% from deep in this series, and just took, you know, his most threes in a game in the series. He was 5-for-8 from three against the Knicks in game four. I know that there's probably going to be some talk about like diversifying the shot profile a little bit, but I think that's more for the guys that are capable of scoring in different, you know, areas of the floor. You don't want Wemby jacking up threes. There was a possession where he took two threes off offensive rebounds in that third quarter. And I was just like, that was when I was really like, all right, they're really rattled. And the Knicks have a chance of winning this game. But I think that Vassell is going to continue to bomb away from deep. 38 minutes per game in this series, by the way, which, you know, has a lot to do with the defense he's been playing. He's been really, really reliable on both ends of the floor and just such a good knockdown shooter, good catch and shoot shooter, and kind of a fearless shooter. Like, there were moments in game four where the Knicks were making runs and Vassell just stepped up and knocked down really big threes to try to knock the Knicks back down. It didn't end up happening, but not to his fault or anything. So I think Vassell knocks down at least three made threes, plus 118, really favorable odds again. The other one I have, De'Aaron Fox over 3.5 rebounds. That's plus 119. That is one where I'm really banking on him being fueled by what we saw happen last game. Like, there's nothing he can do moving forward to like win these fans over. Back over, like, the Spurs fans, they're going to be mad at him. Like, he might have given up the NBA Finals with his play towards the end of that game. And it's hard to put that aside and play a really strong game offensively. But the one thing he controls is how hard he plays. And I think that this is a game where he's going to come out with a lot of energy and do everything he can to try and impact the game in terms of doing some of the little things and, you know, supplying some dirty work. And he's averaging 4.4 rebounds per game over the last 12 games. He's gone over 3.5 rebounds in 9 of those 12 games. He's just a good rebounder. And all of the Spurs guards have understood that in this series, going up against a really good offensive rebounding Knicks team, you just have to help out and do what you can to help Victor Wembanyama get the boards. And I think all of them have stepped up. You've seen it from Castle. You've seen it from Vassell. You've seen it from Harper. I think Fox has been also really solid as a rebounder. So I thought over 3.5 rebounds at plus 119, very good price considering what he's already done in this series. So those are the three plays that I have for game five. I will recap them in a little bit. But at first, I did want to say the NBA Finals are here and the edges are smaller than ever. VSiN Pro gives you the advanced analytics, player prop projections, and expert insights serious bettors rely on when every game matters most. Try it for only $9.99 for your first month and see what sharps are using to beat the books. Head to vsin.com/subscribe and check out all of your options. I said I wanted to talk about the offseason a little bit. I really wanted to talk about the draft today, but there was some news after I recorded yesterday that kind of made me think that we should come back to this a little bit. I know I've maybe talked a little bit too much about Giannis Antetokounmpo over the last couple of days, but this is really heating up and it does sound like we're going to have, you know, some information on where his new home is going to be very soon. And it does still sound like the Heat are the leaders in the clubhouse. It sounds like it'll be some type of package that includes Tyler Hero, Kelwell Ware, Jaime Jaquez Jr., Nikola Jovic, and future picks, and a pick in this year's draft where they do have a pick in the lottery. So not a terrible offer. But what it does sound to me, like just looking around and seeing what other kind of reporters are saying, it sounds like this is not the favorite offer that for the Bucks. It sounds like they are going around seeing what final offers might be from teams that they think could beat that offer. And the teams that we have now heard that they've reached out to are Boston, Minnesota, and Orlando. Boston, we talked about it yesterday with Justin Termini on the show. So if you want to hear that, definitely go over and think about it. But I mean, go over and listen to it. But if you think about it, like, Jaylen Brown was upset with the way that the season went. It was pretty clear. He made some comments about how it was the most fun season he's had playing basketball by far. And look, they didn't have Jason Tatum for most of the season. That's a direct shot at Jason Tatum. It's saying he enjoyed being the number one option on Boston, and it implies he'd like to be the number one option moving forward. That's not going to happen with the Celtics. So if there is a bit of like uncertainty with having him around and the locker room being divided, you might as well flip him for Giannis. I mean, look, Tatum is not getting any younger or healthier. Like, that Achilles injury, it changes your career. It makes it shorter in a way. And like, your longevity is just not going to be there. This is a guy that has suffered injuries in the past. He suffered a lot of them. He's older than his age, in my opinion. And like, if you want to win with Tatum, you're going to do it in the next couple of years. So going out and getting Giannis makes a lot of sense to me. I understand why Brad Stevens is enticed by it. And I'm looking forward to seeing the type of package they could put together. I don't know that if I'm Milwaukee, I'm super thrilled about just getting Jaylen Brown. I think the Bucks should be looking at a harder reset than that. It might not be an option given the teams that are making offers, but look, it's something. I mean, Jaylen Brown was like an all-NBA player this year. You at least bring in another star that's a little bit younger, definitely a little bit hungrier, and maybe you could build something around him. But it's not my favorite offer, but I understand why the Celtics are in on it. Timberwolves, we just keep hearing that Tim Connelly is interested in adding some help around Anthony Edwards, and he has always been like a big game hunter. He's not going to be shy about making moves and shaking up this roster. And the one that's kind of floating out there right now is some type of trade of Jaden McDaniels, Naz Reid, Terrence Shannon Jr., and a couple of picks. And I think that a lot of Timberwolves fans would be upset about that. Like, these are some of their homegrown guys. But if you really think about it, it's a pretty good trade for Minnesota. I think that they have a log jam at the forward position and the big position. So, like, moving Reed out might end up being a positive in general. So I really like Naz Reid. That shouldn't be said. Like, I'm not saying that like he's not a good player. I just feel like this team is not balanced very well when you look at the roster. And I think that moving two bigs for one, like, I know that Jaden McDaniels is a wing, but I think if it's this guy, if this is Giannis, like, you're making your team better. I mean, if you're left with Edwards, Giannis, Randall, and Gobert, you're telling me that that's not a title contender, given everything we've seen in the postseason so far? That team is big. It's tough. It's good on both ends of the floor. You have a little bit of everything. Your goal after that would be to add a guard that can really knock down threes, because your spacing would become a bit of an issue with both Gobert and Giannis on the floor together. But if you do it, you have a lot of lineup versatility with those three bigs. And I think that you are bringing in way more talent than you had before. So look, I don't think that any team wants to trade a Jaden McDaniels, but if that really is the offer and Minnesota's kind of balking at it, they should jump all over it. I don't think that Giannis wants to play on the West Coast, or, you know, for a Western Conference team. That's the rumor, is he wants, you know, a clearer path to the NBA Finals. And he believes that that exists in the Eastern Conference. So maybe this is not anything he'd be interested in, but man, that is a really intriguing team to me. So if that offer's out there, I think they should jump on it. The Magic, final team, the reason that they're now heavily linked is because they are hiring Sean Sweeney as their next head coach. Sweeney has a really good relationship with Antetokounmpo, and they have to do something there as well. Like, I don't think anybody in Orlando would be thrilled about kind of running back the team we saw last year. I don't think that we need to see much more of Banchero and Wagner together to know that that's not going to win the Eastern Conference, even with a really good coach. I love Sean Sweeney. I think just based on everything I've heard about him, he's somebody that, like, I was really interested in the Suns potentially hiring when the head coaching job was open. Ended up hitting a home run with Jordan. Not happy about that, but Sweeney was someone that I was very interested in. Read more about him. It's like, one of the best defensive minds in the entire NBA, good player, like relationship coach, like a player-friendly coach, and just seems like a really smart kind of outside-the-box thinker that I do think will be a really good hire for the Magic, but I don't want to see it with the same exact team, and I feel like the fans would probably feel the same way. So you're talking about Orlando and Milwaukee potentially making some type of relatively straightforward Banchero for Giannis swap, which I would love for the Magic. And I don't love Banchero. I definitely ate my words a little bit with how good he played or how well he played in the postseason this year. And he just kind of continues to be a playoff riser, which that says something about him. Like, that says something about his competitive fire and his talent, because being able to play your best basketball in the time of the year with the best defense definitely says something about you. But I will say, like, I don't love Banchero, but I don't hate this trade, just because, look, you're getting like a number one scoring option and someone that you can have Taylor Jenkins, your new head coach, try to work with and iron out some of the flaws in his game. And he's just so much younger. Like, you're extending your timeline a little bit. I don't know that it's going to be easy to build a contender around Banchero, but you do have a pick in this year's lottery. You bring in a really good player development coach in Taylor Jenkins. It becomes a little bit easier to kind of think about the future. If you swap out Giannis at his age for, you know, a player that's like, how much younger is he? Is he 8 years younger than him? Banchero is 23 years old, will be 24 in November. So yeah, you're just getting way, way younger. And I just feel like that is a positive, and understand why all four of these teams are involved. And I do think it's going to be Miami in the end. I feel like that kind of offers the best for him in terms of, like, gets to go live somewhere nice, gets to pay less in taxes, gets to go to a, you know, an organization that has done nothing but win. I think a lot of people have talked about how bad the team would look after acquiring Giannis. I don't really feel like that's the case. I think you put Giannis with Bam, and you have a bunch of guys that can play with those two. You have Davion Mitchell, you have Norman Powell, you have Pelly Larson. You're going to add some players in the draft. You have Kasparis Giakoumidis, last year's first-round pick, someone that you're, you know, kind of developing slowly but can definitely throw into a bigger role. And you're in South Beach, and like I said before, no state taxes. You will be able to bring in kind of ring chasers or good role players that are looking to potentially contend for a title. So I think Miami would be able to build out something nice around those two, Giannis and Bam, and I'm not downing Eric Spoelstra with those two players. So I think I get it, and from both sides. And I do think that's the trade we're going to see, but I wanted to mention, because I kind of said that it looked like it was a close to a done deal with the Heat, and still kind of feel that way looking at the odds and just kind of reading the tea leaves. But there's definitely more action with other teams getting involved. And then quickly, before we talk about the NBA draft, another rumor I've seen is Domantas Sabonis to Charlotte for Miles Bridges, Josh Green, and a first-round pick, which I think if that's the Hornets, that's a really, really good trade. I understand why people are always hesitant about acquiring a guy that makes like superstar money but doesn't perform like a superstar, but Charlotte is not going to have an easy time signing max free agents or like bringing over superstars. You need to go out, acquire one that you think is a good fit, and just hope for the best. And if you look at like the center position that they had last year, like, I think that Kalkbrenner and Diabate are good players. They're good energy bigs, but adding Sabonis with what he can do offensively and kind of like the DHO work that he'd be able to do with Con Knipple, you're for sure entering the upper echelon of Eastern Conference contenders by only flipping one rotation player for Sabonis. I really, really like this rumored trade for the Hornets. For the Kings, it is what it is. Like, you're just getting a pick and you're getting off a contract. There's really nothing else to it besides that. But man, like, I saw this trade for Charlotte, and it's one that's kind of been talked about over the last couple of years, but it is one that I would like to see get across the finish line. I think LaMelo, Khan, Brandon Miller, and Sabonis would be really, really fun to watch in the East. And then you presumably would still have one of your draft picks to maybe go out, add some help at the four. And we'll talk about that in a second. So I do want to talk about the NBA draft. I kind of just feel like we're getting some really good information out of all of this. So I said it yesterday, or I said it 2 days ago, like, we don't have Jonathan Givony from ESPN anymore to help guide us with some of the bets we could make on draft night. And that's an absolute bummer because it seems like Gavoni is the most well-connected like draft analyst in the space. And if like if you're technically talking about draft, like I am a draft analyst, I do it for Real GM. I do player breakdowns. I scout these players all throughout the year. And then I apply that knowledge to VSiN with ways that we could bet on it. But I don't have any sources. Like I don't speak to anybody in front offices. Gavoni has been able to nail down some spots weeks in advance of the draft, or at least like positions. And we have done really well over at VSiN.com, myself and Jonathan Von Tobel, at least just the two of us that I know of, in kind of reading into what Gavoni reports and finding ways to bet like over under props on players on draft night and all of that good stuff. But we don't have him anymore. Like he's a little bit more hidden now that he's just really kind of doing Instagram content, TikTok content, Twitter content. Like there's no place for him to go out and write. And I just, unless you've seen something different, like I said this when I brought it up last time, if you've seen places where you see him writing and talking about his conversations with front office members, you let me know. I haven't seen it. So I'm going around now and trying to find as much information as I can from some of the other, you know, analysts that I've been reading for years. Like I really do like to see what other people think about some of these prospects and just kind of compare it to where I have them. I think the best one besides Gavoni, though, is Sam Vecenie from The Athletic. And it does seem like in the past 3 or 4 years, he's one of the guys just talking to more and more people. He does great work. So just want to give him a shout out. I do follow him on Twitter. I think he follows me too. So I appreciate that. But he seems like a really cool dude and he's really, really good at his job. And like I said, it sounds like he's talking to more front office members than he used to. And I know he's put reports and stuff he's hearing in his stuff in the past. But I do feel like without Gavoni, we need to kind of take a leap of faith and trust in conversations that other draft analysts are having. And that is why, like last night, I really kind of went through Vecenie. I went through Kevin O'Connor, who also says that he speaks to, you know, front office executives. And I went through Adam Finkelstein from CBS Sports. So three different beat writers, draft writers, all kind of reporting things that they're hearing on the draft and just kind of wrote down some notes that I think that we should keep an eye on as we, you know, head into draft season, which we're going to really pick up the coverage next week. Like, you know, we know that we only do this Monday to Friday. This game five is on a Saturday, so we won't talk to you until Monday. It's potentially going to be series over, but no matter what, we're going to be talking to you on Monday. We'll probably recap that game five in the NBA finals if they lose. Otherwise, we'll be looking ahead, you know, to game six in New York, but we will be back on Monday, potentially talking about the draft a little bit more, but I do want to hit it today. So let's start with the big stuff at the top. It does sound like DeBonce is going number one. I haven't seen a single mock draft that has gone out on a limb and said anything different. It feels like DeBonce is going to be a Washington Wizard. The one different thing that you are kind of see now that like compared to recent years is I don't think DeBonce knows. He hasn't gotten the call yet. And that's a little odd. Like usually that happens like a couple weeks in advance. The first pick will know where they're going. And it definitely speaks maybe to Washington's uncertainty or willingness to trade the pick, something. I don't think that they've completely made up their mind yet, but I do think if they make that pick, it's going to be DeBonce. I think they're going to make that pick. So expecting to see DeBonce at number one with the Wizards. We'll talk about the fits and stuff next week. I like it. I think that you slot him in there on a win now team because he is kind of an NBA ready star. I think that this is going to be a really good Wizards team next year. So talked about that a little bit already, but we'll talk about that next week. Number two is where it gets interesting. I think most mocks have Darren Peterson going to the Jazz. I think Darren Peterson's going to go to the Jazz, but you do get some skepticism from like former, you know, not former Boston people. So Bill Simmons said outright that like he doesn't see Danny Ainge taking the risk and taking DeBonce. Kevin O'Connor, who works for Yahoo now, another Celtics guy, he also said the same thing. Like he doesn't think they're going to take the risk with Peterson when Boozer is kind of like a surefire stud and his dad works in the organization, works for Utah. He thinks that they're going to make the safer pick. I kind of pushed back on that. Like, I don't know Danny Ainge as well as these guys know. Like, they know him very well from just all the time they spent rooting for the Celtics. You really get to know how your decision makers think. I still think, though, that last year we kind of got proof that Ainge is willing to make the uncomfortable pick, and he did it in drafting Ace Bailey. So I think he's going to take Darren Peterson. I think it's just such a clear fit in what they need on that roster. There's a gaping hole at the number two, at the two-guard position, sorry. And taking Peterson at number two solves so much of that. It's like going to next season with George and Peterson as your backcourt, and you have a really electric backcourt to go along with your massive frontcourt of Markkanen, Jaren Jackson, Walker Kessler, Ace Bailey, however you want to play those four, however you want to divvy up the minutes, just bringing that backcourt in and bringing Peterson in with his shot making and playmaking. I feel like it's such an easy decision. I know that it's easier said than done when you're talking about one of the front office members' kids being in the draft and being right there. Like, Boozer is right there. His dad is going to want to pick him. But I feel like there's more than just Boozer in that front office, and they have to do what's best for the organization. And I think it's pretty clear that what's best for the organization is drafting the potential shooting, the potential superstar at the shooting guard spot where you don't even have a shooting guard. So that just feels like where I think they're going to go. Not that interesting when you kind of get to three or four. I think everyone kind of believes that if Boozer's there, the Grizzlies take him. Everybody else also thinks that if Caleb Wilson is there, the Bulls take him. I'm a little bit different at number four. Like, I'm going to end up taking shots on Darius Acuff Jr. to go number four to Chicago. There are more draft markets available today than there were when we talked about this last. So there are ways to actually play this. Like, Acuff to go number four right now is is 16-1. So I think that's absolutely worth a sprinkle. Even if it's like 0.1 units to win 1.6, I think that's worth a shot. And last night I saw Acuff to go top five plus 200. I like that as well. So the reason I like Acuff here is just, I feel like there is a clear top three in this draft. Like, we'll talk about that a lot. Everybody's been talking about it. Dibonsa, Boozer, Peterson, three best players in the draft. It gets a little bit murkier after that. I think a lot of people have Wilson at number four, and I don't blame them for that. I do think he's like a freak and a specimen. I just feel like Acuff put so much like superstar stuff on tape last season with Arkansas. And there's kind of this talk throughout the postseason that like maybe the play of Jalen Brunson has meant like a rebirth of the on ball, like the smaller on ball guard that is a great leader and great shot maker. Like, you have to be very special to be that type of player. Like, it's going to be really hard for someone to be Brunson. Brunson's a top five player in the league, like maybe top seven. But I do think that it's really risky to pass up on like a winner, a polished player, and a guy with like superstar potential when, you know, I just don't see that with Caleb Wilson as easily. I think Wilson has all the tools. He has the athleticism. He has the size. Don't think he has the polish or like the certainty to his game. I think that Acuff knows exactly who he is as a player. I think his game is like wise beyond his years. I think his game is very advanced in terms of just like skills. And I just kind of find it hard to believe that if you're Chicago and you need to add a franchise changing talent, that there's somebody in this draft that very clearly can be a very good pro. I don't think you can rule out them taking him. I think Acuff in Chicago in that market has like fireworks written all over it. And I just don't think it's going to be ruled out. And you are hearing now that like Acuff is starting to work out for some of these teams in the higher range. And I just wouldn't rule out him going number four. So I will be sprinkling that. It probably will still be Caleb Wilson. Just wanted to throw my opinion out there. But let's get back into the other stuff where it's a little bit more actionable. The Nets at number six is where there's a little bit more information. It does sound like Nate Amat, the Tennessee wing, who really reminds me of Zachary Risacher, which I do not think is a compliment, sounds like he's getting strong consideration at number six. So that is something that, like, as the draft creeps up, you might want to think about potentially, you know, throwing some darts on him to go at that exact spot. I still think there's a chance that Amat drops like out of the top 10. Don't think he's that great of a player. Front offices might completely disagree. We'll see. I do think a lot of draft analysts agree, though. And I do think that the like difference between the way like people that really put work in on the draft and the front offices think, I think that gap is kind of shortening. I think that like people are doing really good work out there that are scouting these players for like journalism outlets. So I would not be surprised if he falls out, but it does sound like there's legitimate smoke to Brooklyn being interested in Amen at six. The next one that kind of seems like a consensus is number eight with Ademara, the Michigan center, going to the Atlanta Hawks. And I actually mentioned this when we first did draft talk on this podcast, but now Onsi Saleh has been extended, the decision maker for Atlanta. Quinn Snyder, the head coach, has been extended. And that just leads me to believe that they're going to start building this thing out even more in like Snyder's vision. And bringing Amara gives you an elite rim protector and just a huge body, somebody that's not going to allow you to be punked in a playoff series. And it just kind of gives Snyder like the Rudy Gobert type of player that he's been looking for at the back of his defense. I really like Onyeka Okongwu. I think he's probably best suited to come off the bench, though. So you bring in Mara, like you develop slowly, maybe, but you have your center of the future, in my opinion. And just feel like everybody has this. Like I have it. This is one of those ones. It's a consensus landing spot for him. Maybe he goes sooner, but this almost feels like Mara's floor. So I do think top 10 pick for Mara is like a really good bet. It's definitely juicy. But I think that as we kind of get closer, you'll want to consider just taking him to go at number eight. It's plus 240 at DraftKings right now. So wanted to bring that one up. One of the other interesting things in terms of like player landing somewhere is multiple people have kind of noted now that Braden Burries and Clutch Sports, so Rich Paul, might be trying to steer Burries to Dallas at number nine. So that's something to keep an eye on as well. You can take Burries to go in the top 10 at minus 175. Perhaps that's safer, but it does sound like there's smoke to Rich Paul trying to get him in Dallas to play with Cooper Flagg. And it feels like a really good fit to me. So I kind of think that that's something that I could see end up happening. But yeah, Burries is a big off-ball guard that can play a little bit on the ball, but very well-rounded, can shoot, can attack the basket, can score, getting to his mid-range. Good defensively, good size. Like, I really like that as a long-term fit next to Flagg. And I see why Dallas would be very interested in adding him, especially when you compare it to some of the other players that are around. Some other just quick notes without kind of getting into specific landing spots. It does sound like Morez Johnson Jr., the forward from Michigan, kind of like an unheralded player on that Michigan team, but somebody that every time I watched, I was like, man, this looks like he's going to be the best player on this Wolverines team in the NBA. I remember texting Kelly Bidlin and Jonathan Bontobel about that. I'm like, this is the best player on Michigan. I know that he doesn't get the accolades and doesn't get the usage rate, but this is the guy that I would be really, really looking at if I'm an NBA team. Vecini said that he doesn't see Johnson falling past the top 15. So potentially that's somebody we can get, an over-under price on at some point. Another couple of notes, like it does sound like the Hornets are very interested in being the team that takes Allen Graves. And I do believe Graves has a promise somewhere. Otherwise, I think he would have gone back to college because he was getting like $5 to $6 million offers. That's what it sounds like from LSU. And I don't think you pass that up unless you know you're going somewhere. So maybe the link is even stronger than we think. And it's like Graves will not pass like 18, which I believe is the second pick that the Hornets make. They pick 14 and 18. So that is something to keep an eye on as they maybe make that to Sabonis trade we talked about earlier. But I do think Graves to Charlotte sounds like it could be a pick. And then just some other just random spots that seem like there's strong linkage. These are not like intel spots, but it's just you look around at mock drafts and you see three, four really prominent names in this space picking these players to go to these spots. LeBaron Filon to Miami. So we'll see if the Heat still have that pick. If not, it seems like the Bucks are interested. Bennett Sturts to Detroit. Cameron Carr to San Antonio. Tarris Reed to New York as a Mitchell Robinson replacement because the Knicks are going to be facing some second apron issues soon. And then Ibuka Okori, the talented guard out of Stanford, to Denver. And I don't know if I'm saying this right, but Luigi Suigo, the Italian 7'3" big with guard skills, says he wants to be the Italian Wembanyama. Not sure I see that, but a lot of people like him to go to Dallas because Mike Schmitz, former ESPN analyst who worked with Jonathan Givony, then went to the Portland Trailblazers to be their draft guy, has made some of these big like swings on centers in the past. And that seems like the type of pick he'd make now that Masai Ujiri is there and tasking him with making his draft decisions in Dallas. So a lot of people linking that to Suigo going in the top 30. So the first round, and we'll get markets on that like closer to the draft. We don't have them now. As of right now, what I'm seeing at DraftKings is picks 1 to 5, like exact landing spots, odds to go in the top 5 in general. Picks 6 to 10 are up, so exact landing spots, then top 10 in general. I'll keep checking to see like what else is being offered. But as of right now, I just wanted to throw some of these out there, kind of get them on tape so that we remember them and just really start thinking about who might be going where, what their floors might be. And that type of information can be very valuable as you really kind of get the over under draft position bets. Those are the ones I really like. Like, look, I just gave out it for example, Morez Johnson Jr. Sounds like he's not going to slide past 15. What if we get a 15 and a half on his draft position? We really want to go under on that. So that is the way I'm thinking about this. There's not a lot of action that I actually have on the draft right now. I really don't have any besides AJ DeBots to go number one from months ago, but I'm really starting to think about it. It's like front of mind, ready. I don't want to say I'm ready for the NBA finals to end, but I am excited to start thinking about, you know, where players are going to land, whether that's in free agency, trades, the draft. I'm ready to start thinking about that. Perhaps it's the Suns fan in me. I want to start thinking about Suns basketball a little bit. Like, we don't have a pick. We also don't have a lot of cap flexibility, so won't be our team. But I like to think about where the player movement's going, and probably doesn't hurt that I was also a former Knicks fan. So seeing the Knicks in the finals has not been fun for me. I want to move to the offseason. But yeah, I thought that there was a lot of actionable stuff that kind of came out. Even if it's not directly actionable, it's going to help us next week when we start to pinpoint some of our draft bets. And I wanted to go through it. We haven't talked about the draft in depth in a while and thought that this was a really good time to do it. And I do have some more notes that I don't really want to get into today. We'll do some more of it next week. We'll save a little bit. But that is where I'm at with the draft right now. Before we kind of wrap up this episode, I wanted to say attention to any listeners who are new to VSiN. Signing up for our free daily newsletter is a great way to catch up. Delivered straight to your inbox every morning, VSiN's newsletter offers picks, data, and strategies for the day's betting menu. Sign up for free now at vsin.com/newsletter and start receiving your free newsletter tomorrow morning. That's vsin.com/newsletter. Stay ahead of the game and bet smarter with VSiN. All right, recapping the best bets for Game 5, I have the Spurs -5 at -105. I have De'Aaron Fox to go over 3.5 rebounds at +119. And I have Devin Vassell to knock down over 2.5 threes at +118. So those three picks for Game 5. Like I said, no shows this weekend. My writing's up at vsin.com. It will be up at vsin.com. But we will be back with a Monday episode no matter what happens in Game 5. Even if the season ends Saturday night, we will be back with the Monday episode recapping what happened in the finals, then beginning our offseason coverage, which I'm really excited about. So please join us on Monday, no matter what. And if you enjoyed this episode, throw us a like, a comment, a subscribe. We'd appreciate that, especially on YouTube, Hardwood Handicappers, all one word. We are looking to grow that page. So the quick second it takes to like that, to subscribe to that page really, really helps us out. But hope you enjoyed today's episode. Best of luck if you are tailing my Game 5 picks, and hopefully you learned a little bit of something about the NBA draft today.